Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. For two decades, my guest CC Sabathia was one of baseball's most successful and competitive pitchers. The 6'6" southpaw who retired in 2019 is now probably on his way to Cooperstown with 3,000 strikeouts, a Cy Young Award, 6 All-Star appearances, 26 playoff games, and the 2009 World Series championship. But at the same time he was starring for the Yankees, Sabathia was keeping a dangerous secret, an ongoing problem with alcohol that eventually caused him to miss the playoffs in favor of rehab. That painful period and Sabathia's road to the big leagues are examined in the new documentary Under the Grapefruit Tree, which premieres on HBO Tuesday.
You don't get to control how things end. That's just not the way life works. For a long time, I don't think I knew how to handle that reality. That's where addiction came in. And honestly, I almost blew it all. To this day, I don't think people realize how close I came to losing everything.
Today, Sabathia says he has a new outlook on life and life after baseball. CC Sabathia, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having me.
You know, 2020 has been such a strange year. You retired 1 year before the pandemic and everything that's gone on. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good. Thank you. Thanks for asking. Family's doing well. You know, we've been blessed during this time, you know, to not have anybody sick so far. So we just could hopefully continue to be safe and, you know, we can get through this and, you know, be good on the other side.
A lot of retired athletes are so used to the grind and having their schedule mapped out down to the minute sometimes. What have you been doing with this kind of extra time?
You know what? It's been good, actually. You know, I have 4 kids, so, you know, spending the time with them. My oldest plays baseball, so, you know, I'm on the road a lot with him. Even during this pandemic, they play pretty much all summer. So, you know, I've been spending a lot of time with him. I work out a lot. And just like enjoy being a dad. I mean, like you said, our time is mapped out for so much of our lives, you know, while we're playing, that I think it's good to not be on the schedule for a little while.
You said in the film that you were kind of ready to be done with baseball by the time that came up in 2019. Now that you've been away from the game for a little while, has your perspective on that changed at all? Do you miss the game?
Absolutely not. I wish I could say that I do, and you know I miss being out there, but I don't. I mean, I think I did it for so long, and you know, I started playing baseball when I was 5 years old. So, you know, the nervousness and the anxiousness for big games started back then. So, you know, I've been you know feeling that for a long time. So it was just time to move on to the next phase of my life and be done with like the competition of a part of my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the movie kind of ends with showing you watching Little C, your son, playing baseball. When you watch him play, are you able to enjoy the process more than when you were playing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, being able to watch him, have conversations with him, you know, and trying to help guide him to, you know, his next phase in baseball life and life is, you know, trying to get to college. So it's been a lot of fun. And you know, obviously me going through that, same thing that he's going through now, you know, basically 20-something years ago, you know, it's fun to be able to relive it now and, you know, meeting with all these different schools and watching him play and, you know, having conversations about the game. It's a lot of fun and it keeps me in it. And I think maybe that's why I don't miss it as much.
Are there things that you're able to tell him that you wish you knew about baseball when you were his age?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, just, you know, the mental side of it, thinking your way through the game at bats. The thing about him is, like me, his baseball IQ is super high. So there's not much that you have to tell him. It's just more situational stuff and, you know, thinking his way through at bats and, you know, his approach at the plate and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun to be able to talk to him. And, I mean, he's super mature. He's 17 years old, but he's a mature 17. And, you know, like I said, his baseball IQ is really high, so we can have some fun conversations.
As we speak, CC, there have been some developments in the sport that I want to ask you about. In the documentary, you take a lot of pride in your success as an African-American baseball player. You were one of the biggest black superstars of your time at a time when the sports really struggled to develop those. And now baseball has announced that it's going to consider the Negro Leagues and the statistics as a major league. What's your reaction to that?
About time. You know, those guys deserve their due. I mean, you know, phenomenal ball players across the board. I mean, even if you just look at, you know, after they integrated the game, you know, in the National League, the next 9 out of 11 MVPs were from the Negro Leagues, you know. So these guys, I think a lot of people think that the Negro Leagues is this backyard, you know, exhibition baseball that, you know, people didn't really pay attention to. Now, these guys were really, really, really great baseball players that deserve to be recognized. And when they had a chance to play against the MLB stars, they had a higher winning percentage. So I don't want to hear anything about the talent level or anything like that, because these guys deserve all the credit that they're getting now. They deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, and they deserve to be recognized. You know, I think the sport had to integrate because they were so good. It wasn't like they helped out a failing business. The Negro Leagues wasn't failing. It was the business was booming, actually. But they had to integrate it because the ball players on the other side were you know, pretty much a better than the guys that they had in the MLB. So it's fun now to be able to, you know, have these guys get their due and hopefully, you know, get a lot of these guys in the MLB Hall of Fame.
A lot of young black men in this country don't go into baseball when they have options in athletics. You were a star in multiple sports, but you ended up signing a baseball contract. How come you decided to play baseball instead of another sport?
You know what? It was just getting drafted where I did. You know, I think the biggest thing is for a kid like me these days is that you can't get a full baseball scholarship. So somebody like me, you know, growing up where I played all three sports and I had full scholarships in football and basketball, and I had partials in baseball. So I wouldn't have been able to go to college on a baseball scholarship anyway. My mom wouldn't have been able to make up that difference in the, you know, 60% or 70% scholarship that I would have got. So it kind of prices us out of the game, where if you have a kid that has to make that choice, the game kind of makes a choice for him because you can't get a full scholarship, you know? So I think we need to look into all those different things and, you know, try to give these kids better opportunities to get to college baseball.
Well, that brings me to my next question. You were drafted, of course, by the Cleveland Indians, where you starred for many seasons. They've announced that they're going to come up with a new name and retire Indians as the name. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think it's the right thing to do. I think if it offends one person, then it's the right thing to do. I mean, the 7.5 years that I played there, you know, there were always people out there protesting the name and, you know, standing out in front of the stadium. Even, you know, opening day was always a big deal where people would be outside, you know, protesting the stadium. I mean, protesting the name of the team. So I think the Indians are doing the right thing and you know, taking a look into it and changing their name, and hopefully they come up with something good.
Let me ask you a little bit about the movie. It's a warts and all portrayal of your struggles. Why did you want to be so honest about the trials and tribulations that you went through?
I think so maybe I can help somebody. You know, I think the hardest thing about, you know, facing addiction is actually facing it, is actually saying that you need help. So, you know, hopefully somebody can watch this documentary and you know, get some help if they need it. You know, like I said, the hardest thing about, you know, going to rehab or, you know, admitting an addiction is actually admitting it. Everything after that is great. You know, the last 5 years of my life have been really wonderful. And even the time that I spent in rehab, you know, I really enjoyed, to be honest. You know, I was going away for 29 days, you know, able to work on myself, you know, no cell phone, just be able to, like, at peace of mind. You know, I tell my wife now, I would pay to be able to go back and do that now and just get a month to be able to, you know, reset. So I think, you know, hopefully people can watch this doc and you know, take the next step and turn their life around.
One question I had from the film was, you trace a lot of, you know, the pain you were feeling from your on-again, off-again relationship with your father. He was in and out of your life, and then he died very young. So he didn't get to see all of your success in baseball later. I was wondering how much of your problem with alcohol stemmed from that, and how much of it was the pressure of having to perform on the baseball field at such a high level?
You know, I think it, to me, for me, it would have been, you know, 70% my father and 30% the baseball pressure. You know, I kind of use the baseball pressure as just a reason to drink, you know. I think that the biggest thing that was ailing me, and not just my dad, it was my grandmother too, you know, and then my cousin passed away in 2012. So, you know, I've dealt with so much death. I mean, those are just three big ones. You know, I had an uncle and a cousin pass away 6 months after my father passed away in 2003 that is not in the doc, that I never got a chance to mourn. I mean, my cousin passed away literally right in I started in New York. He died that night, and then I came home. We did the funeral, and then I pitched in 5 days. Like, I didn't miss a start. So I didn't even give my chance to I didn't give myself a chance to mourn or think about any of that stuff. I was just kept going, and I think that's what sent me down that spiral into, you know, abusing alcohol and addiction, and, you know, ended up in rehab.
Have you found another way to deal with grief or challenges in life now that you're not drinking anymore? Do you have any advice for how to confront stuff like that?
Man, I think it's just, you know, going to therapy, you know, actually confronting it and not trying to run from it and dealing with the emotions of it. And you know, just doing a lot of reading about, you know, trying to keep a level head and a clear mind and, you know, making sure that you're feeling good every day. And, you know, mental health is a tough thing, a real thing. And I would always encourage people to try to get as much help as possible.
How did your experience with your father in your life influence the way that you're raising your kids and what kind of dad you are?
I think it makes me a great dad because, you know, my childhood was, you know, up until I was 12, my childhood was great with my father. Like, we were together every day. And that's why I say in the doc, you know, had he been living right now, him and Carson would be so close just because, you know, my relationship with my son is the relationship that I have with my dad. And, you know, I just know that if he was here, he would be at all these tournaments, all these different games. And, you know, I just know that they would be, you know, super close. So that makes me miss him for sure.
I want to talk to you about the title of the film, which is Under the Grapefruit Tree, Your Upbringing in Vallejo, California. It comes from your experience in the backyard of your grandmother's house, throwing grapefruits at a folding chair. That was your first strike zone. How did that teach you how to pitch?
You know, I think people think like I would throw it at the back of the chair, but I would throw it through the little hole in the back of the chair, if that makes sense, the back part. That
Got
was
it.
Like my little strike zone. So by the time I was 7 or 8 years old, I could throw the ball wherever I wanted. That's how it helped me. Like, I didn't take pitching lessons. I never had like a pitching coach or, you know, all these one-on-ones in private that these kids do today. I never did that. I was in my backyard with grapefruits, you know, locking in on the back part of the chair. And if I could throw the grapefruit through there, then I know I could throw a baseball through anything.
A lot of times when we watch the game, it's clear that a pitcher on a given day doesn't have the command that they would normally have. I know you went through this in your career. Sometimes you go out there and it's not going where you want it. Mm-hmm. First of all, why does that happen?
I have no idea. I think if guys knew that, then, you know, you wouldn't see everybody have an ERA in the twos.
So, second part of that question, when that is the case, when you're warming up and it just doesn't feel right or the first inning hasn't gone well, what do you do? Because, you know, the manager's counting on you to go 5, 6, 7 innings.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's when it's just battle mode. And that's when you see, you know, who is tough and who isn't. You know, everybody can pitch when they got their good stuff. But the guy that can go out there and battle when they can't throw strikes, when the breaking ball's not working, and go out and give you 6 tough innings, give up 2 or 3 runs and keep you in the game and give you a chance to win, that's the guy I want on my team. You know, Luis Severino does a great job of that as a young pitcher. You know, if he's not feeling great, he can still go out and give you 6 innings. And, you know, that's an ace. And that's something that, you know, Dave Berber taught me. You know, bend but don't break. You know, do whatever you got to do to you know, keep us up and them down. You know, whatever that is. If you got to make up pitches, do that. And it's just going into battle mode. And I learned that early from you know, my older mentors, Dave Berber and Chuck Finley, and it just stuck with me.
Do you regret seeing the change in the game where, you know, sometimes teams are now using their best relievers in what's known as a high leverage situation in like the fifth inning, that's the end of the starter because they think the game might turn at that point. What do you think of that dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way the game's gone. And, you know, everybody's trying to build a super bullpen these days and, you know, have a guy for each inning. You know, but I think if you look at the teams that have, you know, actually won the World Series the past couple of years, they've done it with starting pitching. You know, everybody tries to use one formula to win during the season, using openers and all this different stuff. But when you get to the playoffs, you need three starters to win. You need three starters to go six, seven innings to give you a chance to win a World Series. And, you know, at some point, it'll revert back to where, you know, you need starters to give you length.
In 2009, you signed a huge contract as a free agent to come to the Yankees. They spent a ton of money in that offseason, opened the new stadium in 2009, and won the World Series the first year there. What are your memories of that experience and that first year?
I think the one thing that I remember from 09 is that it just felt like we were going to win every night, you know. We had so many walk-offs and so many comebacks, and it was just a lot of fun to be around. And you just got the sense by August that we had a pretty good chance to win the World Series. So it was a lot of fun. That year was great. I mean, that was probably the best team I've ever been on in my career, and you know, as far as closeness too. So it was very enjoyable to be on that team, and you know, to win here in New York the first year in the stadium. It was incredible.
I think something that fans always wonder, because we take it so seriously, is when you don't win and the season comes to an abrupt ending in the playoffs, how hard do players take that?
Yeah, that's tough, especially, you know, the later it gets in the playoffs. You know, you get this feeling of, you know, you got a chance to win, especially if you won before, you know what that feeling is like. And, you know, the later you get in the playoffs, it's tough to deal with that loss and that crushing loss. But, you know, you give yourself a couple weeks, get right back after it. And you know, here in New York, you know you're going to be right back in the playoffs. You know you're going to have that opportunity again. So you better be ready and, you know, try to learn from your mistakes and, you know, get it done this time.
Is there one year from post-2009 that bothers you more than any other years because you guys didn't get it done?
10 and 11, to be honest, because those were the same. That was the same team. And we were really, really good. But for whatever reason, we just couldn't put it together. But I thought for sure after we won in 09, you know, we would have won again by 2012.
I want to ask you about 2012. Now, if I'm thinking about a favorite CC Sabathia memory, it's got to be Game 5 of the ALDS against the Orioles in 2012. Pitched a complete game. Yankees won 3-1. It was a low-scoring affair, maybe one of the most tense baseball games I've ever watched. And you, of course, pitched for the second time in the series to win the game. How did you make it through a complete game in that kind of pressure cooker?
You know what? That game wasn't even that intense. For me, I guess everybody was Game 5, so it was intense for everybody else. But for me, it was like, I don't know. I just was feeling good. I kind of felt like I was in a groove, and it wasn't that intense. The only part that got really, like, it got a little dicey for me was the Nate McLaus when he just hit the homer foul. And then once they called that foul, I was like, man, that was y'all chance to score. That was it. Like, I'm not making no more mistakes. You know what I'm saying? And I literally just had, like, a mental lapse through him, a slider, and he hit it pretty good. I knew it was foul. They were begging for it to be fair, but once they called it foul, I was like, oh, that's game. Like, I mean, but for whatever reason, going into that Game 5, I knew we were going to win. But, you know, I can't explain to you why. I just felt really good about it.
CeCe, I mentioned in the lead that I think you have a very good chance to make it to the Hall of Fame here in Cooperstown. Do you give any thought to that?
Yeah, now that I'm done playing, for sure. I mean, I would love to be able to go into Cooperstown. I mean, obviously a kid like myself from the inner city in Vallejo to be able to, you know, go into Cooperstown is obviously a dream. I mean, I never even played or could dream about going to Cooperstown. It was just always, you know, trying to make my next start, you know, when I was younger, not get sent down. And to be able to sit here now and, you know, have people consider my career a Hall of Fame career, I mean, that's just an accomplishment in itself. So that's a blessing. But if I ever got a chance to get in, I mean, that would be awesome.
I know you said you don't miss the game day to day, but do you think there's a chance you'll ever get back into coaching? Will we see you in a dugout sometime?
Nah, no coaching. Definitely like around the park though. You know, but like I said, I just don't know if I can get back on that schedule where, you know, it's dominating my summer. You know, maybe when my kids are older, maybe I'm in a different space when I'm in my 50s 10 years from now. But right now, I just want to enjoy being a dad and kind of hang out and you know, travel and live some life.
Last thing, what's your favorite Star Wars movie?
Return of the Jedi, for sure.
How come?
You know why? Because my dad took me to go see it. So that's, it got me like into Star Wars.
Okay. I won't spoil it for people who watch the documentary, but there is a nice cameo of CeCe Sabathia as Yoda.
Sure it is. Yeah, I forgot about that.
CeCe Sabathia, the new documentary about his life is called Under the Grapefruit Tree, and it premieres on HBO Tuesday. CeCe, thank you for all of this time, and thanks for all the memories on the field.
No problem. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
To Sabathia, fitting, called in, and for the 15th time, the Yankees are on their way to the American League Championship Series.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.